We're on.
Okay. I'm going to call this meeting to order. Today is Monday, April 5th, 2021. This is the business session of the Elizabeth School District Board of Directors meeting, and it is 6:02 p.m. Can I get roll call, please?
Director Beckendorf?
Here.
Director Formfeller?
Here.
Director Gutenberg?
Here.
Director Hines?
Present.
Director Carter?
Here.
Okay, would you please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can I share a quick story?
Yes.
So we had a virtual site visit with the homegrown talent folks who were online, who were on Zoom. And then we had a lot of people here in person, and we Zoomed in teachers and students for different sections of the agenda. And while the students were talking, these were students, four students who have internships, and they were talking about the internship program, and in the middle of their talk, the high school went to their announcements. And the first thing they do with their announcements is they say the pledge. So they're in the midst of giving their presentation. They come on the loudspeaker at the high school announcements. They all just stopped their presentations, stood up, and did the pledge. And we were all
That's awesome.
That's great.
That's cool.
It was just like natural because they just stood right.
That's great.
That is cool. That is really cool.
It didn't matter they were in the middle of a presentation with a bunch of people on Zoom. They just
That's
priorities.
Awesome.
I love.
Yeah.
We all were proud of ourselves.
Yeah, yes. Definitely. No doubt. Okay, can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Firmfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Carter?
Aye.
Okay, can I get a motion to approve the minutes from the board meeting from March 8th, 2021?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, I'm doing Guten and Carter.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Firmfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Carter?
Aye.
Okay, moving on to communications. We have HR update with Ken Chun.
Yes. Hi, everybody. Big week for us as a district. We're going to be doing interviews for the EMS principal this week. We're starting tomorrow. We have four candidates that we're looking at initially, and they will be before a leadership panel. In fact, Ron will be part of that. Douglas and I will be there to observe and get some good feeling for the candidates. So that's tomorrow. We will then on Thursday have a process over at the middle school for the same candidates. It'll start, each candidate will start with a half hour tour of the school, and then a 45 minute interview, and this interview will be done by EMS staff, so that's the staff and hopefully some parents, which we're trying to get right now, that'll be part of that panel. And then after the interview, each candidate will do a role play with the staff, and Douglas has developed what I think is a pretty good role play for this exercise. And once that's completed, we may have it narrowed down to maybe one or two candidates, and that's when we turn it over to Douglas to have some discussions with one or more candidates. So we'll do some significant reference checking, hopefully by the time we meet again next, we'll have another principal selected and ready to come on for the next school year. So obviously I'll give you an update of that, and probably Douglas will too, as time moves forward. So this is big for us, so I'm kind of excited about this week.
Can you say something about the role play?
Yes,
you referenced? We found that in leadership positions, it's good to not only ask the candidates a lot of questions, but you're really testing their ability to answer a question. So the role play kind of flips it around and says, you're the principal. Here's an issue. Here's your team. work through the issue. Show us how you work. I remember one interview many years ago. The candidate talked about what a good listener they were. And when we got to the role play, it became evident to everybody on the committee that they were a terrible listener. But they claimed that that was one of their strengths. But they didn't listen, and they actually offended people because they were such a bad listener. But with the role play, we try to create something as real as possible. So Brett's role play when he interviewed was about a schedule change at the high school. And the question was something like, we've changed, or it's been proposed to change the schedule 3 times in the last 5 years. You know, do you think this is something that should be looked at or not? And now they're, you know, 6 years later, they're changing the schedule. But so it's not a made up thing, because the idea is for everybody, the staff that are doing the interview, the parents if they're there, and the candidate, to be as natural as possible. Because what we're trying to do is get to know the candidate versus see how they can jump through hoops. And it's just a way to see if what they do lines up with what we thought we learned about them with the questions. So
will the interview be in person, or is it going to be
open? All interviews right now are scheduled in person.
Okay, good.
Yes, great. Here in this room tomorrow morning,
okay.
And then at the middle school on Thursday.
Okay. So,
yeah. Great. And the it's the role of the candidate to really lead the discussion. And so that's how we kind of get a real feel for some of their skills, how they think, how they relate to others, and so forth. So,
in the role play.
Yeah. And so we'll obviously keep you very, very well posted as to how we're doing and how we're progressing with this. So, last week, I wanted to talk to you, give you a very brief kind of synopsis of our insurance plans for next year. Our life insurance, health insurance, vision, dental. We met, we meaning our insurance committee, our employee committee, met with our broker, Bill Cook from Cook & Associates last week. Bill presented some options for us from Anthem, our current provider. And I wanted to kind of let you know where we stand for next year. I'm going to start with vision. I'm going to start with some of the easier ones first. But our vision insurance plans will be identical as they are this year. Again, our employees have gotten very used to how to use these plans. And there's going to be no premium increase. And we have a two-year rate guarantee for vision. So that was very good. Also, life is our plan is identical. There's no increase again for employees or for the district for next year. On dental, our plan again with Delta is going to be identical. It's going to be the same plan that our employees have been using for a number of years. A really modest 2.5% increase for dental for next year. And then for medical, which is our big one, our plans again are identical, which we've been trying to promote as much as possible so people really know how to manage their health care, understand their plans, and so forth. We have, again, what I consider a pretty modest increase of 4.94% for next year. The two plans, we have three plans. We'll have the same three plans next year, although two of them will have a two-tiered medication or RX choice for them. So that's really the only change to any of our plans for next year. And then so total, just to let you know, the total additional cost for the district for next year, for all of these plans, is about $60,000, which is it's pretty modest actually. So it was a real successful endeavor, and we have a really good employee group that goes over these proposals, asks questions, communicates results out to their peers, and so forth. So I just wanted to kind of give you little idea of what's going on for next year. Ron will talk maybe a little bit tonight about in his budget information about what's budgeted potentially for increases for next year. It's going to be a very minimal additional cost for our employees for next year, rather than gobbling up their pay increases with additional premiums. So that's going to be really good for our employees. So that's done. And then the last thing, Ron and I are working on pay schedules for next year, just kind of putting some scenarios together. In our next, I guess our meeting on the 19th of this month, we will be bringing to you some proposed pay schedules for next year. We will not ask you to vote on them and approve them at that meeting. We just want you to have a chance to see them, and we'll bring them to the May 3rd meeting for a formal vote. So I just want to kind of give you a heads up on that. We've been working quite a bit on it, and I think we're closing in on what could potentially be some pretty good pay schedules for our employees next year. So that is it. Any questions?
No.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Hey, Douglas, I have another question.
Okay.
Maybe not this time, but next time in the future, is there any way the board members can watch this role-playing scenario?
Yeah.
I'm just curious. I'd like to see how it works.
Sure. Yeah, no, if you want to do it on Thursday, you can.
Well, if I'm out of quarantine.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Douglas.
Yeah. I can set up a Zoom too.
We'll see if there's. Yeah, let's talk offline about it.
Okay.
But yes.
Anything else? Okay. We'll move on to technology update with Marty Sublin.
Good evening, everyone. Just a couple of updates for you guys. As you know, CMAS testing started last Monday at the middle school, continuing this week. Tomorrow, I believe they're starting at Running Creek and Singing Hills. EMS is continuing to test this week. Last week was their online students. This week is their in-person students. And so far, on the technical side of things, there haven't been any issues. And then the other thing just to continue to tell you about is more of our summer planning. Yes, sir.
Have we had any parents opt out for their kids?
We have. I don't know what the exact numbers are.
Yeah, there are every year.
Yeah.
And so we have.
Was it any different, do you think, this year than that?
I talked to Rob, who's our district assessment coordinator. And not that he would necessarily have all the information. But the information that he had as of, I think it was on Friday when I talked to him, is that when he was in? It didn't seem that there was an unusual number of parent excusals. But that needs to go directly to the schools in each case, not through Rob or to Rob. So it's more a matter of, as he's talking to the schools, what he's hearing.
Just curious.
And we make an assumption that if they're in 100% online learning, that they've opted out. And that's a state kind of approach to this, that if they've said that they're not going to be in person for learning, they're not going to be in person for testing, there's no remote testing, so they're kind of automatically considered as a parent excusable or opt out. But if they, and that's what Marty was saying, if they want to take the test, they can. They have the right to do that, and we have the obligation to provide it. And so there are students in all levels who have been remote, or I should say more accurately, 100% online, that do want their students to be tested. And so we're making that available to them.
Okay. And my other update, was that it?
Yeah.
My other update to you guys is just more summer planning. As you know, we've installed and purchased, I don't know, maybe 850 Chromebooks this past year. And so we're still moving forward with that. That has afforded us to be able to provide one-to-one down to the K kindergarten level. If you remember, our plan was fourth and up. And so we still need to continue to replace older computers that are in the district. And so there's another roughly 400 Chromebooks that we'll have to order this summer. There's still a, and so the roughly there's like, it's for the incoming ninth graders at the high school, it's for all of seventh grade at the middle school, and about three classrooms at the elementary level. And we're still having, or suppliers are still having supply issues, our vendors are. So this is slated to go out as a fiscal year July 1st purchase, and so it depends on what the availability looks like once I get my RFP out there and go through that whole procurement process. And it may be that we might not have all of these Chromebooks by the beginning of the school year, just like what happened to us this past fall as well. But we're still planning to move forward, and hopefully we can group them together in a way that makes sense for us to minimize kind of disruption for our students. This is around the time of year when we do our tech survey. If you remember, every August or September, I report to you results of our tech survey. And so I'll have my meeting with my ETIC members, my tech committee members, this coming Monday. We'll discuss our tech survey, and usually they are the ones who help me with their staff and their colleagues to administer it. And so that's on planning. We're planning right now. The other kind of big thing is we still have some traditional labs in the district by necessity because of the types of software they use. There's software that we use in a district that can't be used on Chromebooks. So that's like our audiovisual class at the high school. It's the graphics lab at the high school. We have a couple of business labs at the high school. We have a STEAM lab in the middle school. So those are going to be replaced this summer as well with a combination of HTI funding and also NLO funding. So that's about 90 or so computers that'll be on our plate to also replace this coming summer. Along with our usual refresh, we refresh about 35 teacher computers every year that we have on a 5-year refresh cycle. And that's pretty much it. Any questions for me?
No. John, do you have anything?
No, I don't have anything. I'm good.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Marty.
Thank you.
Moving on. We will move on to Chief Financial Officer, Tom Kerr, with your update.
All right, you got checks for over $5,000 first off, and you got your typical monthly payments, plus out of district tuition for SPED services. SPED, out of district meaning the students go to that institution, and then we have SPED contractual services for people that come into the district to work with students in the schools. We also purchased some cafeteria tables, cleaning equipment, cleaning supplies, software support, a bus payment for the debt service, and an annual customer support disbursement. Any questions on the checks over $5,000?
Hey, Ron, the only thing that I was curious about, I saw two electric payments, one at the beginning of the month, one mid-month. Maybe I read it wrong.
Yeah, there's two of them, yeah.
Is that normal?
No, not really. Sometimes it is, and you know, it just depends on, because each school has a different account number, they don't always arrive at the same time.
I see.
Every month.
I see.
And sometimes
okay.
They come in at two different times.
Got it.
So when they come in, we try and process them as quickly as possible, you know, on the 5th and the 20th of each month.
Okay. Okay. So. I didn't realize that. I thought they just sent one bill for the whole district.
Why make it easy?
That's a good point.
Yeah. So that's it for the checks over $5,000. Financial statements. This report reflects activity through the end of February, or a little bit over 66%, or 66.6%, way through the fiscal year. Revenues after allocation stand at almost 41%, while expenditures and transfers stand at 61.75% expended as a percentage of the budget. As for the revenues, the first of the large property tax payments came last month, but obviously because they came in March, they're not reflected in this report. And then you'll see revenues creep on up to where they should be as we are as a benchmark at this point in the year. As for the balance of the funds, we are closely monitoring the food service and athletic funds, mostly due to the unusual nature of the year. Plus, with the pupil activity fund, they are not collecting gate fees for athletic events such as the wrestling and the basketball this year. So they did it for football, but that was it. So that's not happening there. And that's it for the financial statements. I have a budget and a utility update if I could take this time now to do that. So first up, for the budget discussion, the additional cost, as Ken alluded to about the full year salary increase for the current year, the price tag for that is about $70,000. And when I first estimated what the increase was for the two-thirds of the year, it was significantly more than what this would have been times two. But it was because I was estimating it. And when I got the real numbers, then I got to see it wasn't as costly as I originally anticipated. So the price tag is for the balance of the year, $70,000. For the budget for next year, and I gave you two handouts, budget assumption, preliminary budget assumptions, and I underlined assumptions because they are nothing but assumptions. Nothing is concrete in this. This is just kind of the beginning stab at getting an idea of what our budget's going to look like. So I think I've gone over this with you before, and so I'm just going to try and cut to some of the highlights. But the first thing I want to do before I cut to the highlights is at the very bottom I listed two grants that we're getting from the federal government as it's passed through to the state. One is ESSER 2, because you approved ESSER 1 grant application. ESSER 2 is $486,000 less, about $90,000 that's going to be flowed through to the charter. ESSER 3, which is the most recent grant approved by the federal legislature, is we get over almost $1.1 million. However, figure a couple hundred thousand is going to be flowed through to legacy. This is, I have to do an application process. That means I have to create a budget for every single line item, every single dollar that we're anticipating to spend for each of these grants. So I'm going to be bringing two, I forget the exact name that they're called, assurances from that I have to say that we're going to abide by all the federal laws and all the guidelines, Davis-Bacon, and all this other federal bureaucracy that we have to adhere to, and that we're going to do that. So I'm going to be bringing those two assurances for each one of these grants, and that's all part of the process. And then also I'll be bringing you the budgets for each one of them. But the budget or the application for ESSER 2 is not due until September 30th of this year. We have until 2022 to spend all the money. ESSER 3 application, I believe, they're going to want us to complete the application before September 30th. They at least want our assurance that we want the money and have these assurances approved by the board within 60 days. So probably at the next meeting I'll be bringing the assurances form for your approval for ESSER 3. The allowable uses, some of the allowable uses are actually for HVAC equipment. And we would like to spend, I'm assuming we in the general sense, on the HVAC equipment, because it helps keep us in person by having the environment, meaning the air quality in the rooms, improved. And we also need better units to replace some of the older units, because we have these upgraded filters which get the particulates out of the air, and so they're not staying in the classroom if somebody did bring it into the building. But that means it's also putting a lot more pressure on the HVAC units. And since they are, some of them, quite old, we need to get better ones in there so we can keep it at the same pace they're at right now. And the same success.
When we do the application and we get approved, how soon after that will we have access to the funds?
Immediately.
Immediately?
Okay. Yeah, but it has to be approved, and it's not an easy approval process. So. And we have to have a narrative. And last time there was at least a long paragraph narrative for each budgeted item. And they come back and say, well, how do you know it's reasonable? Or how is it allowable? How is it that this is helping to prevent? And they want a lot of detail in there. So it's not an easy process to get completed. So But as soon as it is finally approved, then we can start spending the money.
There is a 20% holdback on ESSER III. So the state's going to get, and so I don't know the timing of that, but ESSER III is a little bit different than ESSER II, even though it's a lot more. So there's a requirement for ESSER III that you have to spend a portion of the money on learning loss, which we didn't have to do with ESSER II specifically. And so the state's working to provide a workable definition of learning loss, because that's a hot topic, especially for districts that isn't their biggest need. You need to say they've been in person.
Right.
And so, so that's another challenge.
Yeah, I didn't bring that up because, well.
He tries to keep it simple.
But that is a big deal, because we've been in person since day one, this school year. So how do we address learning loss?
Right.
granted there was 2 years or 2 months from the previous year, but how do you do it?
So yeah, I can say that from my perspective, the state's working to be sensitive to the fact that there are school districts around the state that have been, and that learning loss isn't and shouldn't be narrowly defined by the terms of districts that have been closed, the majority of the
right.
to in-person learning, and may have evidence of a lack of progress on the academic progress, but that's not in our sense. So anyway, those are some of the challenges that are new, especially in the ESSER III money. So.
Is there a timeline on when you have to spend that money by, too?
2023. Middle of 2023. When I say 2023, calendar year 2020, not the. All right, going back to the assumptions page, at the start, at the top there, you have the $2.8 million. Again, that's just, it's kind of a shot in the dark. I don't know what it's actually going to be, but I'm just, they need to put a number in there, something to work with, and figuring $2 million at a minimum is what our target ending fund balance is going to be for the at the end of next fiscal year for this upcoming budget. And I included just the big highlights of the budget, of the impacts on the budget. I anticipate that we're going to have an enrollment increase of 28 students, and that was based on, I took a poll of how many students are at each school by grade level at the, I think it was either at the end of February or beginning of March. And I just, all I did was move first grade, second to third, and then also a portion of the eighth graders from Legacy every year come to the high school. So I also included a few of those in here.
That's a nice change, though.
Yeah, but we've lost a lot.
I know, we have. But just to see it going a little bit up instead of down.
Right, and there's a lot of rooftops popping up over here in Spring right. Valley and
right.
Independence. So that's going to have an impact, I'm assuming. So again, and that's also contingent on how many online students
right,
come back to in-person learning, or they're going to find a alternative. Who knows what's going to happen? So let's see. The possible increased revenues from the state at this point in time is about $1.5 million. The projected per pupil operating revenue is almost $8,800, way up from the current of a little over $7,900 per student. Let's see. Rural funding increase. We only got a portion of the total increase for rural funding this year. And so my anticipation, based on discussion with the state, they gave me a percentage of what we could use based on the amount of money we received this year. It's about a little over $54,000. Improvement fees, we're getting a lot of improvement fees this year. We're going to continue to get a lot of improvement fees unless something dramatic happens. But the increase over this year's budget I see is about $150,000. We're also found another tenant that wants to go on the water tower, so for cell site revenue, we're going to get about an $18,000 increase. On the increased expense side, like Ken alluded to, we were going to have a premium increase. We approximated it at about $60,000 for health, dental, and life and vision. We're having a meeting in 2 weeks with our broker for the property and liability and workers' comp insurance. I know there's going to be an increase, don't know exactly how much, but I put in there the $50,000. Increased sped costs, I'm going to be meeting with the sped department later this week, and I should have a better idea what the actual increase is going to be. As you can see also, I put in there $600,000 for salary increases for next year. That's for all of the all the groups, certified, classified, and then, so that's that dollar there. Capital needs increase. Again, this is the increase of $150,000. Now, that is mostly due to the collection of the improvement fees. We collect improvement fees from the builders based on the fact that we're going to have additional capital needs at each of the schools or at schools to accommodate the influx of students. So that's where we spend those monies that we collect from developers is the is in capital expenses. And then let's see, we have a structural deficit in the budget right now of about $1 million. That probably will go down, but I just wanted to put that in there as a placeholder so you can see that what is actually in the budget right now is about $1 million. It's not that significant, but I wanted to shoot high versus, you know, say it's just a small structural deficit, and then it's like, oh, it's a lot greater than we had originally anticipated. So that's in there. But you can see that when you take everything into account, that you're only reducing your fund balance by, you know, about $350,000 there at the bottom from our starting fund balance. So all these additional revenues and additional expenses are not that, it's not going to have a humongous impact on our budget like in previous years, because while the state isn't completely replenishing the money we didn't receive this year, it's really close to what we received 2 years ago versus this year and then going on to next year. So I feel comfortable saying we can achieve these numbers here. We were good with these numbers for increased expenses on that. I also gave you a list right now of capital expenditure needs. And
well, before you go to that, I just want to, especially for the newer board members, that a structural deficit is different than deficit spending.
Right.
So just to be clear, we're not saying there's deficit spending. And it's really, simply put, the drawdown of reserves is what the structural deficit is, meaning that the budget will draw down what's in reserves versus building up reserves. So I just want to be 100% clear, it doesn't even come close to meaning deficit spending, because it is not.
Gotcha.
It's basically the difference between the anticipated budgeted expenses and the budgeted revenues this year, and then taking into account, sometimes we budget a little bit higher than usual for expenses, a little bit lower than usual for revenues, and then there's that structural deficit that's left over. So, the capital expenditure, most of these we've seen in the past, the tech purchases, the debt service payment for the school buses, the safety grant match. The next one is, we found out over this last snowstorm that we have some serious issues with our snowplow blades. And we were out there, when I say we, the people driving the trucks, our employees driving the trucks or driving the plows, that our plow blades are not in very good shape. We need to get new ones. Since I've been here, we've never replaced one of them. That's 17 years that we've had these blades, and they really need to be replaced. So
Ron didn't drive, but he was out shoveling.
Yeah.
He didn't drive a truck with a plow blade. He was just
he shoveled with his bare hands.
Dang. That was right? Wet, heavy stuff.
Bare hands?
He did. Right, and at the end of the day, he called me and said, I think we should close school.
For months.
There's so much snow out here.
Either that or
actually,
just
he didn't say that. He let
office.
Me come to that conclusion based on what he's huffing and puffing.
So Ron,
so he has first-hand experience with this.
What's that?
One blade per school or how?
There, no, just two blades for a truck.
Okay.
Oh,
for,
yeah,
so, yeah, they're, and we're not going to, we're going to get the ones that are the V-shaped,
right.
But they can also go out and they can also maneuver. And
yeah.
Lloyd got a little envious of the plow blades that the town was using and how good they are. And so it's like, yeah, let's, we need to go do that. Because it took, I couldn't believe how long it took.
Well, $15,000 isn't a lot of money for, you know, that. Replacing the blades.
It's not like I buy a whole lot of plow blades.
I just bought one for my side-by-side a few months ago, and it was $3,000 just by itself. And that's just for that's a 60-inch blade.
Okay, Reed, we got to talk.
Did I get...
We'll talk.
Okay.
It's too late, apparently.
Is it too late?
Not to talk.
Well, yeah. For, in 17 yeah. years, we need to buy a new one, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So you'll know next time.
All right. So the concrete repairs, it's just right now a placeholder. We don't have, I mean, we know of concrete issues in the school district, well, in the whole state of Colorado, there's concrete issues. But we know that we should probably, we're going to have concrete that we need to replace, and I just put a placeholder in there for the time being. We want to do some more carpeting, and then we're going to be getting close to being done with all of the carpeting needs in the district. I put down $400,000 in HVAC replacements. It could possibly go up even higher based on what we're doing. We're doing some research and having some couple of companies come on out and give us some estimates on what needs, what our greatest needs are for HVAC, whether it's at middle school, high school, or what have you. So, there's some really bad stair tread. I don't know, at EHS, and I can't believe how much it costs, but it looks really bad, tacky, and it's also a safety issue in those stairs at the high school. But, yeah, it's... They need to replace. And also, we've got old equipment in our kitchens at the schools for food service equipment, refrigerators, freezers, dishwashers, and so we need to start replacing them, or we're gonna end up losing thousands of dollars worth of food one year because of failure. So we need to start replacing some of these units when they go bad. And that's it in a nutshell. You see the price tag for it, but. And part of this, the HVAC units, like I said, we can use ESSER. And just because the numbers on my budget assumption spreadsheet show the increases from one year, from this year to the next, anticipated, I went ahead and I wanted to make sure that you saw that we do still want to replace HVAC units, even though I've talked about it here, it's in black and white too. And the ESSER 2 and 3 funding, I didn't put any expenses related to that in my budget assumptions, simply because they're sitting by themselves at the bottom, because the expenses are going to have to match the revenues. So the revenue, or all of the expenses, are going to be covered by these two grants. Just don't have what those expenses are going to be at this point in time. All right.
Ron, on this, I know previously we had a few other items on here last year that have fallen off since.
Mm-hmm.
Are those going to come back on here in priority level as well?
Well, we didn't really address a whole lot of capital issues this past year.
Right.
And so that's why I want to make sure we get the highest priority needs on here first. And so that's why they're... not on there, because we're trying to focus on what the school's immediate needs are to address when they come up for the next year when school opens again. So I understand what you're talking about, the scoreboard and that, but it could come back on.
Okay.
So I have one more thing to talk about. Two more things really quickly. The policies are on here that are in your packet. The facility use, the genesis or the impetus for working at that this past year is not like trust me, I didn't want to work on this because it was a massive project to work on. And it hasn't been updated in, I know, 13, 14 years. And so it needed to be updated. And the reason I started working on it, and I also got input from a safety perspective, our attorney looked at it for things that need to be all-inclusive in terms of who you know, language we use. And then I was seeing that we weren't getting compensated for events that we're putting on. The actual costs weren't being covered by what we were charging. We weren't charging enough for usage of the facilities or the custodial use and things like that. That was the reason why it started getting, that we had originally tackled it, and it became a much bigger project. I don't want to die on any political hill for this, for this facility use policy, but it needed to be addressed, and so. I got a lot of different perspectives on it. I sent it all out to the office managers. I got feedback from them. I made changes based on the feedback I got from them. So I hope it works out. I hope you find it that it's a worthwhile tool once it's approved. But then also the other policy in there is for expense reimbursement. We hadn't changed any of that for 13 years or 12 years, something like that. And the biggest component of that, and it wasn't very much for the expense reimbursement, was just increasing the daily meal reimbursement from $50 to $60. And that's based on averages that I got from the IRS guidelines. And each county, unfortunately, is different than the state on the reimbursements. So I tried to incorporate those. It's basically, like I said, it's going from $50 to $60 bottom line each day. So, and, oh, utilities, this is it. I thought when we modified all of the, how we're running the equipment at the buildings, that we were going to see much higher utility bills. We have not. And the reason being is that, as I believe it is, it's attributable to the new control unit that we purchased a couple of years ago. Part of that new control unit has an analytical component to it, and we can review it on a weekly basis to see where there's any inefficiencies. And it has really helped us monitor and control our costs. And I actually did create a four-year look back compared to our utilities as of the end of March, and we're actually significantly down from 4 years ago in our utility costs.
Yes.
So last year from this year, not a whole lot, but it's still lower.
And well, we had that new system last year too, though.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
Is that net of Frontier?
Yeah, I took it completely out of it. All I did was look at the four remaining buildings. I didn't look at the total cost. It's just from those four buildings, gas and electric. And I was really surprised at how much of a difference, because we were turning on the we were using a lot more electricity, I thought, because of the because of running the fans a lot, much more during the day. And if they're working by the evidence of, very few cases.
Right.
Okay, that's
very
it.
Very good, thank you.
Cool.
You have any questions?
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Ron. Okay, we're going to the superintendent update.
I'll start with the Homegrown Talent Initiative. Beginning of the calendar year, you've heard continuous meetings and update from Brett about what they were doing at the high school. And even though you haven't heard from Brett, they continue to move the project forward. We had, as I mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, we had what they called a site visit, but it was a virtual site visit. So the team leadership, which is Kristen and myself, Brett, Dave Eddy, and Leanne Cook met. And then there were teacher and administrative leaders that either joined or got on the phone, like Kimberly Runyon, who's been kind of shepherding the schedule change through the high school. And some of the teachers that have been leading either the concurrent enrollment or the certificate courses. So I don't know how many people at the end of the day were a part of that that meeting. It was a day and a half long,
yeah,
wasn't it? But
there's a 15.
So it was a part, a chance for us to get on the same page, because there's so many things happening, it's hard to do that, but also to align a bit with what we're doing with what HT, so that HTI knows what we're doing, and so also, you know, following through and meeting objectives and that sort of thing. Let me see. I wanted to just highlight a number of the larger project strands. And in front of you, you have two things. One is the high school came to a decision about their schedule next year. And so this is what a typical day looks like for a student, whether it's a Monday or a Tuesday or a Wednesday. And they are going to be changing their schedule from what's called an alternating block, which is what they have now. So they have 8 periods, 4 on one day, a red day, 4 more different classes on a white day, and it just alternates every other day. One week, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, you might have your red day classes, and then Tuesday, Thursday, you have your white day classes. But then the following week, it's different. Monday, you wouldn't have your red day classes, you'd have your white day classes. And therein lies the big issue, which is that it's difficult for students to schedule both internships, and it could be a college concurrent class that's not provided on site. It, say, meets every Tuesday and Thursday. To some degree, I know they've been able to make it work, but Pickens Tech, where the students leave for the afternoon, or any other obligation for the student outside of kind of regularly scheduled classes. So the goal was to have a predictable Monday, a predictable Tuesday, a predictable Wednesday in terms of what the student's schedule would look like, therefore they could mesh with things happening outside school. And as you heard from Brett, they piloted 2 possible changes, one for 2 weeks in January and then another 2-week test in January. What they came up with, and that's in front of you, is neither of those, which is okay, meaning to say that the idea was to test the concept and see what the experience was. And I think you've heard they got a lot of feedback. I forget the numbers, but in terms of staff, we got feedback from every staff member,
and I think it was close to 400.
Yeah. Well, students.
A combination of parents and students.
And then multiple meetings to process that feedback. And to understand their own experiences. So, for example, they liked having all 8 classes on one day. It was a chance to see everybody. But one of their tests was on Friday. They didn't like that on Friday. So, I don't know if you can see it. It's what they call stacked. So that happens on Wednesday. So the students will have 4 classes on a Monday, another 4 classes on a Tuesday, but then on Wednesday, they have all their classes. And then Thursday, Friday, they only have 4 classes. So they found that was enough, because the other pilot was, I think this stacked, I think it was like 3 days a week, and then the longer classes twice a week. Math likes a little bit more frequently. Science likes, they like longer time, so you get out, say, 45 minutes of, say, lecture or introducing the concept, and then 45 minutes for a lab. So certain subjects tend to like a shorter or a longer class period. Um, And so, you know, they stuck with the block schedule, which they know and they feel like they can teach to, but have this added ability to make sure the students can see all, you know, be in all their classes that one day. And so that's what they're going to move forward with. And I think that you might have heard from Brett in January, I mean, you might remember hearing from him, that they hope to have the feedback the first week in February and maybe make a decision by the end of February or something like that. So they made this decision at the end of March. It's actually not that big of a delay, because these kinds of things can take a very long time. And Brett pointed out the other day that really there was 2 years of laying the groundwork to just be open-minded about a change and to understand why a change might be needed. And so there was a pretty broad understanding that a change was needed and why one was needed. So there was a high level of engagement in understanding the issues and the pros and cons of different alternatives, and then the staff really listening. So both the administration and others that were involved listening to the feedback and really trying to understand it from the multiple perspectives. And that's why it took long. But I think that what it means is that there's a high level of investment in it, high level of ownership in it, and a greater chance that it won't have some unintended consequences because they didn't think things through. So this is kind of an important restructuring of the framework for classes at the high school in order to lay the foundation for these other opportunities for students. So this is, in a way, a very kind of operational, technical thing, but it has large implications for what we'll be able to do, including partnering with other school districts, because when we have the rotating schedule, we can't partner with other school districts and what they might be offering a student to take an ag class with a class, even if it were online, offered through Elbert, because, you know, if they do it on every Tuesday, well, we can't plan a schedule around every Tuesday having that block available then. So it's very, in a way, very powerful change. A couple of other things, they're still working on pathways, and then, you know, I don't think that it's evolved too much since the last time that you saw it, but the some of the people from HTI that have a lot of experience with this kind of change recognized and complimented our work with pathways, that it really helps with student engagement and students beginning to think 8th grade, 9th grade, about where their interests are, and to not just take a collection of cool classes and opportunities, which, you know, was what we were also sharing, was the new opportunities for kids, but to have a kind of coherence to what they're taking. There's been really good progress on certificates. Or better put, industry-recognized certificates, are specific skills that students learn at Elizabeth High School, sometimes from a trained teacher. So Candace Tauber is trained in Adobe, and she offers a number of Adobe certificate classes. So you can either get a particular Adobe certification, or you can become a master Adobe certified if you learn everything in their suite. And she had to be trained, and she was last summer, to be able to offer those and provide the assessments and that lead to the certification. But I think we had, I don't know whether it's just with her classes, but I think there were like 31 students or 31 certificates that have been or are on track to be earned as of this semester.
That's right.
And those are really powerful for students in terms of equipping them to do things, not even after they graduate. If they're interested, they can do them before they graduate.
Douglas, yes. On that point, can that be celebrated during the graduation ceremony? I don't know if you have influence into what gets covered. I know, to a degree, you do, but at the same time,
you'd be surprised at them.
It's.
I can give you the name of the person
that does.
Okay, fair enough. Fair. I just think that's something that really needs to be celebrated and isn't offered in a whole heck of a lot of high schools.
Yeah, will you remind me? So it's Robin Berry is at the high school,
right,
in charge of the graduation ceremony, and it's a specific job responsibility that she has that takes up a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
She does very well, but it's
I just know they always talk about the number of dollars earned in scholarships, yeah. But this is every bit as
that's
important
huge,
in
yeah.
my mind.
Yeah, and we so it's a good point that you can bring it up with
okay.
Brett. I can promise that we'll discuss it with her and Brett,
yeah.
And we'll see what goes in there.
Sure.
Yeah. And so there's some business certificate classes that we've been working on with Metro State, and John Lautzenheiser has been the lead on that. There's some English, no, that's the concurrent. Sorry.
Cybersecurity. And an iOS app.
Thank you.
Certification.
And so we're kind of going from almost zero to whatever number, which is great. It's not like a full menu of certificates. There are over 200 that are recognized by the state, but we're building the capacity to continue to expand those, and fit them into the schedule. Because, like for example, the more certificate classes that Candace teaches, Candace Tauber, the fewer standard non-certificate classes she can teach. So somebody's got to teach those. And there are kids who are interested in the basic drawing or whatever art class that she's offering. So that we can't just kind of push everybody towards certificate classes, and that's a challenge at the high school, both from a scheduling and a staff perspective. The college concurrent class, I wanted to say that Candace has been teaching some of these classes, like Adobe, but they haven't been certificate classes. So one of the changes is that her certification and then the work that she supports the students to get the certification, that's new. So some of these things we've been doing, they just never led to a certificate, and now they're leading to a certificate. The other area is college concurrent classes, and that's why I mentioned MSU, also with Arapahoe Community College. And there's two kinds of college concurrent classes. I think mine's like 15 minutes though, right?
It does.
Okay. So one is college concurrent classes on time.
Wow. Teasing.
College concurrent classes offered on our campus, typically but not exclusively, from our staff. And so they have to get certified. So we're looking at how to recognize the effort that the teacher goes through to become certified. They have to have a master's, they have to meet certain requirements, including the course content. And then college concurrent classes that are offered off-site, and how whether they're offered remotely and they're attended remotely, or actually the student physically attends. And we have some in English.
English.
Do you remember?
I want to say business. It's like 121 English 120 and 121, and then there's business courses.
On campus.
They yes. will be, at the high school.
Okay. Because
yeah.
I know there's a full suite of courses students can take through the
yeah.
college itself. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And we're those. Working on those.
Okay.
And then how to kind of advise students what to take, and that's all in development. Another thing that's in progress is the profile of the graduate. You have a copy that's two-sided, because this is what's been given a lot of attention so far, just the competencies that we're working, that our graduates have when they graduate. But then, kind of what is each competency? So, for example, adaptable and resilient. And one of the things that you should know about the detail of these characteristics and competencies is that they include some of the other things that were identified in all of our focus groups and feedback sessions. And so there are things that we decided to kind of include under these titles. For example, I'm trying to find a good one here. Think of the last one there, entrepreneurial, the kind of problem solving that is part of entrepreneurial. So it could have been problem solver, right? And but that is a part of being entrepreneurial. It's identifying an issue of concern, you know, and mobilizing to address it. At each school level, they're looking at how it applies to at the elementary level, the middle level, and the high school level. And they will be building both from a classroom perspective and an outside the classroom, where can students develop these skills and thoughts. In addition to that, we're working on, I guess it's really marketing and positioning around this. And Kristen's been doing a lot of work on that. So we're rolling out big visual at the high school. So some of you may have seen the flags out from the high school. Those are designed to go over to the middle school once we put a big, it's called brick wrap. It's like adhering to the brick. It's like painted, it looks like it's painted onto the front. It's a cool process they use. It's like 1,000 degrees and they go over
every 3 inches.
It's intense. But they've got the design. I think it's finalized now? Or in the process of
being... in the last step. We're adding a couple tweaks to it.
So, this is something that's, how big is it?
It's very large.
Have you seen it at all, what we're talking about?
Yes. You showed me at the high school when I went through it with you. You showed me where they were going to put it up.
It's going to be on the gym. Can you? And I don't know that we can easily project it. I guess...
Outside or inside?
Outside.
Yeah, okay.
On the big wall. Do you have it? Okay. And Sex, you'll pull it up and turn it around so you can kind of see it, and then if you want to see it up close. It's basically colors, the words, and then the symbols here in a big mural. Big mural type thing. There she is.
And it will cause no damage to the existing facade on the building, correct? I have to ask for Ron because I saw him getting fidgety.
No damage.
I'm teasing.
I think it reinforces.
That's really cool.
2,000 degree torch.
That is cool.
That's
what I worried about.
Can you point that at the camera? John can see it at the end of the year.
That's cool.
So I think the piece that's missing a little bit, it's harder to tell, is how they're working to layer in
that,
the
John?
Little icons.
Yeah.
Can you see that, John?
The words.
I've been texting him everything. Of all the handouts.
Take a picture of it.
So, for those that are familiar with the high school, I think that wall outside the gym, it says Elizabeth High School on the left-hand side, then there's a door on the far right. From the door to about middle of the wall, all the way to the top, it's large.
It's going to be visible from the street. Not the parking lot, but the street. Which is part of the goal.
Yeah.
Right.
We're going to have lights on it?
And it's... are we going to have lights
That's
on
good
it?
That's a good
idea. Oh my goodness.
Buy some little solar lights just to shine.
I think we're moving a tree.
That would be like 500 solar lights.
Yeah, exactly.
There would be. Yeah, not just
then
two.
Then DIA planes would
land. Yeah, right. So I think two trees are being moved.
Two trees are being moved.
Holy cow.
And I think you're all invited. When's the targeted unveiling, more or less?
We're targeting end of April, pending weather and how quickly we can get the graphics turned around.
So you're welcome to come. Kristen will invite you. The unveiling of it will be primarily the students and staff at the high school, which is going to be like 650 people. I mean, it's not going to be a small affair. And then I think that the plan is to have a much kind of larger open house with that as a backdrop in the fall, where we can highlight a lot of the aspects of the Homegrown Talent Initiative to a larger, more external audience to include. And then with additional folks, maybe a representative from AC, from Arapaho Community College, or maybe local business or whatever, because we've got folks doing internships. And I didn't mention the internships. So the internships, Leanne is not trying to go for volume right now. Leanne Cook is leading that program. She's trying to build a framework and a sustainable program that includes really high quality internships where it's mutual mutually successful, both for the organization that's hosting the intern and for the intern, and so that we don't have any bugaboos with, you know, say a bad intern and a bad experience and a bad word of mouth. And so some of the opportunities that the kids have are just phenomenal. So we heard about a welding one, we heard about an equestrian one. There was somebody who's working, it's equestrian related, but at a barn. So there's more like a vet oriented equestrian, and then a barn that's like state of the art, probably unique in the country kind of barn. They have all the latest and greatest. And
a digital tech company in the tech center. And
we're just four, right? As I mentioned, it was
trying to think of Izzy. Anyway. She was doing something with the courts.
Oh, right, the justice
system. Yeah.
And was she working at the DA's office or something?
I honestly.
Oh no. She's the one who didn't have an internship. She had.
Oh, that's right.
So instead of, because she wasn't able to do an internship, she's participating in a number of like
job shadow
type stuff to get the exposure. And
that's
these
great.
Students were impressive.
That's awesome.
And motivated and articulate and thoughtful, and they just both the HDI and us just so impressed. We were like, it's just amazing.
That's great.
That you would be too, and you'll get a chance. We'll bring them around so that they can speak, whether it's at that event. We were thinking that they might talk at that unveiling and talk about, get seven of them to talk, and each one talk about one of these and what it means to them and what they've been doing in their internship. So I know I'm probably missing some things for HDI. Am I missing anything?
No, I think you covered the... There's a lot of little things going on, but this is a big...
I did want to mention to you, Douglas, that I've had some conversations with Leanne about our STP program, which is essentially an internship program, and how we can. So if you remember, for the past 3 or 4 years, we've had a student at the high school work for us.
Nice.
And so how can that fit into to that as well?
Yeah. Oh, I know why there were five, right? Because Bella, was she doing an internship or not?
With Leanne.
Yeah. So anyway, it's amazing what's already been built up and how much value the students see in it and how much they're learning and the kinds of things that they're learning. It's just quite great to hear. So,
is that
yes.
The student out of Salem once?
Yes.
That we ran into.
Yep.
Into the doctor.
She hosted it.
Yeah.
She was the student host. She was phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. Bella, yeah.
Right. Because we saw her when we were up.
Yeah, I remember. She
was,
didn't mention that.
Teacher cadet, among mm-hmm. other things. And we ran into her. And her leg's doing better. She was on a cast. Anyway, the other thing was end of school year plans. And I won't go into great detail, but just to know that the schools are working to have as many end of year events that are important to the students and to parents as possible. So, for example, the fifth grade field day is a day where the kids, the fifth grade, or the elementary field days, I guess. It's
yeah.
really the
mm-hmm.
elementary field days. Sorry, and then there's a fifth grade day, too, that they typically do in the fall, but they didn't, where the high school counselors come down and work with new stuff with kids. So middle school continuation ceremony. There's the senior luncheon tomorrow for most everybody. So,
are they like the fifth grade? Is that going to be at Evans Park? Okay.
Yeah. So.
So we're doing it's a normal.
Well, right, as normal as possible, and as we get closer to each event, we'll see how normal we can make them. Mm-hmm. Trying to do as much outside as possible, because then that means it's more. It may not be normal because we're doing it outside when we normally do it inside. But fewer restrictions in terms of how many people can be there and what protocols have to be followed and so forth. So the outdoor is just much kind of less risky than indoor. So, you know, it's like if you can do it outdoors, you know, go for it. So that's the, you know, graduation will look more normal, say, than last year's graduation, a lot more normal. I don't know what protocols we'll have to follow at that point, but hopefully just a minimum number. But we'll have audience members, not just graduates. It'll be outdoors, weather permitting, right? And
last minute permitting.
And what?
Last minute.
Last minute, right, I know. I think each one of our perceptions about how the pandemic is evolving and affecting our community and affecting our schools, I think that in the past month or so, there's been some challenges where we have, we know people who've gotten the virus or people that have been exposed. Just today, we had to shift three impacted groups or groups of kids at three different schools to remote at preschool at Running Creek. Not a lot of students at Singing Hills. I think the number was maybe five or six in one classroom that were sick. We did get a report that two of the students who we thought might have been with the virus, because they've been exposed outside the school, tested negative, but we still are kind of assessing that situation. And then a situation at the high school that impacted at least 28, if not 30 kids, many of whom are seniors, who then are not able to participate in the senior luncheon tomorrow. So these exclusions from in person are really disruptive to kids. They're disruptive to families. We're following the shortest protocol that we can, which is 7 days of being healthy after being exposed, plus a negative test. We're providing anybody that wants it the BinaxNOW now at home free rapid test, so they don't have to go somewhere, but they can get a test anywhere. But that's worked well for a number of people that have used it, and a lot of people have used it. It's kind of this, as we feel like we're coming out of the pandemic, to have even three situations in one day, it's a little discouraging for our leadership. It's even more discouraging for the people affected, because what we've seen is more often than not, there's nothing that anybody could have done. It's not like you can say, well, if you had just stayed home or if you had just communicated. Sometimes that's the case, but it's not always the fault of somebody. Even if you do everything right, it happens. But our kids have generally been pretty good, or I should say more than just generally, but it's hard. It really, we heard at the Student Advisory Council, well, there was one young lady who'd been sent to remote learning three times because of exposure. And it wasn't not her fault. That's the hard thing for people to get. They don't do anything, and boom, their life is kind of transformed for a week or two.
Can I say one thing about the testing process, just so everybody's aware? My daughter was one of those impacted today and chose to do the test there. What's really neat is they don't make them meet with the doctor or the teledoc visit there. They bring the test home and do it with their parent. And then present. So just so everybody's clear, it's not something that we're allowing kids to have full access to everything and say so on everything. They have to actually do the test at home with their parent.
Yeah, and then if the parent is okay with it, then they do it.
Yes.
And if the parent is not.
Correct.
And they can get a test somewhere else, but they don't have to get a test. It's just that you can come back with a negative test and you can come back after 7 days. From exposure. So Lori's been great. I've mentioned her numerous times. She's come and talked to you, but we sent out these things. We always put her name, call with any questions, and she always gets lots of calls. And then she just talks with the folks. I think maybe she talked to your wife today, right?
No, my wife wasn't able to get over.
She wasn't?
No.
Not yet. Anyway, that's a great approach, I think. Just because of Lori's willingness to talk to people and hundreds of people she's talked to. And so she knows the issues and she's able to help them through it. Did I forget anything?
I have a question, Douglas, on the schedule change at the high school.
Yes.
I'm assuming then snow days or holidays don't affect how they used to affect those schedules before, and they're a block schedule.
So if Monday is whatever, Labor Day, it's whatever's on here for Monday doesn't happen. And on Tuesday, they go to the Tuesday schedule.
Right.
Does that answer your question? And if Tuesday is
Because before, if Monday was going to be a white day, but it was a snow day, Tuesday would become the light day and everything would shift.
Yeah.
And I know that for STP, when we would schedule, we would have to kind of reschedule us, you know. And so this makes it, like you said, like easier for all those internships.
Yeah.
You won't need to fly flags on the flag post anymore.
Right, we won't need to flag flags on the flag post. The red or... Oh, maybe they will, though.
No, they will, because they still
They still have the red day and the white day. They just don't alternate.
Right.
I mean, maybe with time, that's like, it's irrelevant because everybody knows.
That's true.
Right. That's everything's going to be consistent. It's not going to be Monday, Wednesday, Friday, next week, Tuesday, Thursday.
Right, so you won't need the flag to tell unless...
Right.
But you'll have new freshmen every year.
That's true.
So maybe
you still have that senior that has senioritis and doesn't remember what
day
it is.
And then late starts on Thursdays.
On Thursdays. I think that they've got a. They've kind of. Yeah. There are some other things. You see these two, Tuesday and Thursday. So Tuesday's got a homeroom.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that like Monday and Friday are similar. Tuesday and Wednesday are similar.
Mm-hmm.
And then Thursday is a little bit different because it's a late start. So All right, well, thank you.
How much time did you have?
I took 30 minutes.
That's okay, you get a lot of information.
Smart.
We know you always try. That's okay, you're fine.
You gave your best effort.
It wasn't 40 minutes, so you're good.
Okay. And when it's 40 next time, you'll say it wasn't 50.
It wasn't 50, so you're okay.
You get to 50, though.
Yeah, you have
to stop.
It's going to be worth it.
The gavel's coming down.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on to public comment. Do we have any public comment?
No.
Okay, there's no public comment.
That's 10 minutes you just took, so you're good.
Yeah, that's true. Moving on to consent agenda. I have a motion to approve items 8.1 through 8.7.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Cornfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Okay, moving on to action items. Can I get a motion to approve item 9.1, ratify inclement weather closure from 3/15/21?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
Just that for new board members, that closures need to be ratified by the school board because it's a change to the schedule that you adopted when you adopted the calendar. A late start doesn't require ratification, so that's why, because we had a late start the next day, or a delayed start, we call it. And so that's not on here. That doesn't need to be ratified.
Okay. Any questions? Okay, roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Okay, moving on to 9.2. So all of these look like they're first readings, except for, at least the policies. First and final on it, I think. Do you guys want to go to a second reading on all these?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
There's a lot.
There are a lot. Okay.
9.9?
Yeah.
Pardon?
9.2 through 9.9.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those will all be first. I mean, yeah, first, but not final. Okay. So can I get a motion to approve 9.2, first reading of revised policy GBGL, staff victim leave?
So moved.
Second.
Is there any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Okay, can I get a motion to approve 9.3, first reading and revised policy GBGJ, staff for review. I need new glasses.
So moved.
Any discussion? Okay, roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Okay, 9.4, can I get a motion to approve first reading of revised policy KF, community use of school facilities?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Okay, 9.5, can I get a motion to approve first reading of revised policy KF-R-1, community use of school facilities regulation?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Moving on to 9.6, can I get a motion to approve first reading and revised policy KF-R-2, community use of school facility, category for assessing fees regulation?
So moved.
So moved. Second.
Discussion? Okay, roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Okay, moving on to 9.7, can I get a motion to approve first reading and revised policy KF-R-3, community use of school facility, custodial and facility use fees regulation?
So moved.
Second.
Sorry,
John, I think, had it, right?
Yeah, John, and you seconded it? Okay.
Oh, no, whatever. Okay, first, second?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Discussion? I mean, did I say discussion?
No.
You just did.
Okay.
You just
did. Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Usually try to say discussion while she's writing. Give her a chance to write. The name's done. Okay, 9.8. Can I get a motion to approve first reading of revised policy DKC, expense authorization, reimbursement, mileage, and travel?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion. Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Frumbrella?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Moving on, 9.9, can I get a motion to approve first reading and revised policy DKC-R, expense authorization reimbursements?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
No.
Roll call, please.
Director Beckendorf?
Yes.
Director Frumfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Karcher?
Aye.
Okay, on the 9.10, first and final reading, a revised policy, IKF 2021 graduation requirements.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion?
Yes. So the document that you have in front of you is a redline version. And the way that it prints out, it in the top right under the policy, IKF, it doesn't print the change. This is policy currently, IKF 2021.
Oh, yeah.
It's the new policy, so if we approve this, the new policy will be IKF 2022.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if you would just write that there, that's so that the title of, because we have a current policy, IKF, with no year after. Because we have two graduation policies, one that goes into effect, that went into effect until 2001, and then one in 2021, and then one that took effect as of 2021, that's now being extended or postponed 1 year, so it's now 2022. So the old policy moves forward to be in place this year. And this doesn't take effect on these accounts.
Okay. I had a question for you. When I was reading through this after you sent it this afternoon, I started looking. This is based on how things are arranged today at the schools, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so there's a high likelihood that HTI might impact this in the future.
Oh, yes.
Okay,
good question.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think Brett may have mentioned that that's something that they might even come to the board with.
Yes.
Like, for example, in August or early September, is some recommended revisions to graduation requirements based on the homegrown talent board. So that's anticipated and I would say expected. But this is just a technical change because last spring the standardized tests weren't offered, and standardized tests as competency measures for math and language arts were part of the new guidelines.
Perfect.
And given that they weren't offered and that juniors last year who were seniors this year couldn't take those assessments, then the state board changed the rules to allow the phasing in of that new requirement of competency demonstration through an ASVAB or ACT or whatever, would just be delayed 1 year.
Got it. The main reason I asked is all these standardized tests and how they kind of run counter to some of what we're trying to do with HTI, at least in my mind.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Yes, thank you for that clarity.
Yeah, and we can talk more about some of the alternatives.
Yes.
To things like SAT and ACT for demonstrating competency. One of them is the ACT work keys, is more work-oriented, and it might be that, we, for example, offer that for anybody that's interested. There's another avenue that some districts are taking that are related to or involved in HTI, which is a capstone. Which is similar to what Frontier did, and that's available under the policies of Capstone, but it might be more clearly defined as a part of HTI in an updated version.
Great.
You can see that we also eliminated the requirements for Frontier on this because they're no longer relevant because Frontier is closing. And then
there
was just
a kind of a formatting thing with
post-secondary. Yeah. Anything else?
Thank you.
Anything else? No.
Anybody?
Okay. Roll call, please.
Director Breckendorf? Yes.
Director Fromfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Percher?
Aye.
Okay, moving on to 9.11. Can I get an approval for approval of the USQP grant, universal screener, and qualified personnel?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Okay. Roll call, please.
Director Breckendorf?
Yes.
Director Fromfeller?
Yes.
Director Gutenberg?
Aye.
Director Hines?
Aye.
Director Percher?
Aye.
There are no discussion items, so we'll go on to BOE planning. We have our Board of Education retreat. April 24th.
So, Dr. Beckendorf has a conflict.
Okay.
It was completely unexpected. My daughter's freshman orientation is occurring the 22nd, 23rd in Chadron, but I might be able to come back for half of the day on the 24th if you guys want to meet in the morning and start, depending on how you want to do it. Okay. I'll leave it open to you guys.
Okay.
Everyone else is available on the 24th.
So would you be back in the afternoon?
I will be there for part of it. Yes.
Okay. Oh, what do you guys think? We could start a little bit later.
Yeah. Okay. I know how you
work about
that.
I'll manipulate that to my advantage.
As
Thanks, Paul. So, what time do you want, and where do we want to have it, and what time do you want to start? Any input from you, Douglas?
Open.
What, 11 o'clock? Is that too late? And then we could run until 5, 6?
What time do you think you'll be back?
It's really hard to say. We're staying there the 22nd and the 23rd. It's only a 4.5-hour drive back. So if we leave at 8 o'clock, I'll be back by noon 30. I could be at the school or wherever by 1.
So.
So, but I know that's only start.
I'm flexible.
I think you can start at 10 maybe, because we can take a lunch from 12 to 1 probably.
Yeah, right. And then just, you know, save.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we can arrange the agenda.
Big stuff, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Sorry, guys.
Do you know if the high school library is open? Do you want to do it there?
I like doing it there.
What?
I like doing it there.
Yeah. Most likely. I mean, it's not used.
Okay. Good. John, does that work for you?
Sure does, Carol.
Okay. Okay, so 10 o'clock. Next board meeting is April 19th. Is everybody available that we know of?
Yep.
Cool.
On the April 19th agenda, I'm going to add something as an action item related to the graduation requirements. I just pulled up the existing one, which I can't have, because it currently says in its title, graduation requirements, and in parentheses, graduating classes prior to 2021. And I just think, just to remove any kind of ambiguity, that should probably be changed as well to graduating classes prior to 2022.
Okay.
That's what they've been operating under is the existing, so there isn't any change. But given that, and I think that's the only place in the policy where it says that is just in the title.
Yeah.
But I think it opens up some ambiguity, and just from a policy perspective.
Right.
So that'll just be on there. We'll put it under consent. But we'll just change that from 21 to 22.
Okay.
To
that's
align
fine.
With what. Okay. Sorry about that.
That's fine. Okay. Anything else from anybody?
I'm going to be forwarding you an email from CASB for their convention in December. They're trying to get a feel for who would be interested in attending, if they're going to have it in person. So just keep an eye out for the email and let me know, please.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Okay. With that, I will adjourn this meeting at 7:34.